Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Blind Bargain Cast, episode 103. I am Joe, that man over there is JJ, and you are in for some treats for sure, because we're light on news this week, so that means we have to come up with a lot more other stuff to fill up a podcast.
I like that, though. You know, I like the features show. It doesn't have to be a news show. A news show can, you know,
news has been quite busy and or depressing for some, so I am quite happy to have a feature light.
Right. We had too much news last week. We had lots of news last week, and
we're
now
have
we
a
don't
bunch
have much.
Next week with WWDC.
Next week's the Apple show, so just strap in for that one. This one, we got some cool features, including a device called the Read, which is a tool that is being developed for teaching kids, especially Braille. It's another Kickstarter thing. Really cool. Alex Tavares, who is the inventor, and Corey Cadlick from the Perkins Library is going to come on a little bit later and talk to me about that.
Hey, there's another one of those things where we've got Perkins and San Francisco Lighthouse and Carroll Center. I mean, just interesting to see what's coming from all these wonderful centers. Also, what's interesting, many people have asked, so we go back into the Blind Bargains kitchens and play with some things around the house, and we'll talk a little bit more about that.
We've had specific requests. You guys need to do more cooking.
More cooking. Interesting. That is really interesting.
You know, maybe we'll just spin off and do a cooking show.
Right? And we could totally do that with the absence of insects. By that, I mean no smart beetles in the kitchen, because that might actually be bad for your smart beetle. There are other things, though, you should take into the kitchen, and they would be fascinating, as you can tell. This episode is brought to you by Hims.
Hims, you can visit them on the web at www.hims-inc.com, and you can learn all about the forthcoming, very soon forthcoming, BrailleSense Polaris, and on its way to being released in the coming weeks. So lots of information being posted up over at the Hims website about that, and we'll hear about them a little bit later in this here podcast.
The show seems to be having more and more focus on the aftermath of WindowEyes in this situation. This week, we have a couple of projects that are out to try and capture those WindowEyes users. Project Contact Lens is a way for people to move over to NVDA. And then Brian Harchin has a training on WindowEyes users and migrating to JAWS. So we talked about options and how those individuals who might not be ready to migrate yet would have to have some training and tools, and it seems like the community has provided.
Really interesting discussion. I'm on the NVDA development list, as I've been for a little bit now, and this thing got posted there end of last week, and some very candid discussions between the NVDA developers, some of the developers of add-ons. Jamie was posting on there, especially answering some questions, and also some former WindowEyes users kind of saying, hey, look, this is we want to perhaps come over to NVDA. Here's the things that we don't see currently in documentation. You know, there's certainly a lot of gaps in that. And some very candid discussions about what might be possible, people working to write up some new guides and migration guides, both for the users, which is the larger segment, but also really importantly, the developers. So people who want to perhaps do add-ons, people who have done add-ons or apps for WindowEyes, thinking about how they might do add-ons for NVDA. And so if you're switching from WindowEyes to another screen reader, you're kind of having to learn something. But the more documentation and examples that are out there, the better. And, you know, I'm seeing it on the NVDA side, and Brian's working on and others working on the JAWS side, because there's certainly a lot of users that are going to be looking for a new option. And documentation here is going to be huge helping them out.
Absolutely. I think this is a seminal moment for those who are kind of getting a gut check on how they feel about screen readers in general, where we've moved past the initial shock and awe into the what's next portion. And it seems like a lot of good voices are starting to pop up to really support the things that care about. And I like some of the conversation we had about that last week. It seems to be really showing up in zeros and ones, if you will. More about zeros and ones, as many people are also making suggestions on how NVDA can actually further themselves along financially, which was interesting to see too. I saw that conversation happening on Twitter. So definitely some movement in that respect. In VFO news, surprise, surprise, Fusion, Zoom Text Fusion, has been released.
With JAWS.
Yes.
Not with WindowEyes anymore, yes.
Not the WindowEyes version that had been available previously. So,
this is
normally where I would say something, but I don't have to say it anymore, Jay.
Oh,
Okay. I don't have to say something that I used to say all the time because last week my team was disbanded. So I am free and clear to navigate. So let me just say this. I'm not wild about what's going on with Fusion. And it's not just because I used it with Zoom Text and WindowEyes. I had really hoped that there had been a option to clear the decks, if you will, clean the cruft, do mm-hmm. some things that are very different with Fusion. But it seems that Zoom Text is going to adopt the licensing standard that JAWS is using, which has never been my favorite to begin with. And there's some other things that are happening to Zoom Text as part of the merger with JAWS and such in products like Fusion. So whereas I'm ecstatic for individuals, and let me say this again, there are certain organizations and certain training centers that this will be a great opportunity for, right? It's one license. They don't have to manage two SMAs. They can deploy where it's needed. So for those who need Zoom Text and JAWS at the same time, which hadn't traditionally worked together, they were competitors, so they fought each other, going back to the old DCM days. Now they're working together, and that's good. And for those users, that's a fantastic option. But there was a really, good opportunity here for them to start over and have a clean version of something. But I just don't see that happening.
But one of the things I would say about that is trying to create a clean version probably would have taken a lot more time than, you know, than trying to just mesh the code bases of two existing products. And at this point, so if I'm a library and I just want to provide an assistive technology solution, do I lose things by getting Zoom Text Fusion versus buying JAWS and Zoom Text? Like, is that the way to go?
So when you load Fusion, you'll have a Zoom Text icon, a JAWS icon, and then the Fusion icon, which again is good for those who are, let me give you three scenarios real quick. The classic Zoom Text user who's an old fart like me, who's used it forever, only wants to use Zoom Text and be affected by its hotkeys. Although some of those hotkeys were changed in Zoom Text 11, but that's a discussion for another time. JAWS users can just walk up and, you know, do insert J and be just fine. No problems, no issues. For a user who wants to use both, that's managing two interfaces, two sets of hotkeys. Although Zoom Text 11 has made that a little easier so they can coexist a bit better. The Fusion interface is designed for those who really want to run both at the same time. And somebody who's newly blinded, say somebody who's transitioning, retinitis, pigmentosis later in life, diabetic retinopathy. Right. They're going to take visual cues into blindness with them, and they're going to take those tools in transition. This is a good time for them because they can learn one interface and then just smoothly move into JAWS. So there's some good and some bad here. I'm trying to be positive and negative on this conversation at the same time.
Yeah, and I totally see the need for the thing. But I mean, I understand, especially on a version one, I understand how there can be hiccups. And I haven't played with this specifically, but I know even just from a WindowEyes user, when they were trying to mesh that into Fusion, just kind of some of the rifts and things that would happen there, just because, you know, you're trying to combine two products which inherently have tons and tons and tons of keyboard shortcuts, and then somehow making both of them work at the same time. It's certainly not an easy thing, in, you know, to manage and to try to make it work.
Like having highlights for say all, you want that, you know, cursor to go across, and you like having the bold implements of X font, and some do, or the new geometric smoothing on PDF, then Zoom Text and then having JAWS is a good thing. So there is some good stuff there. What I truly do hope one day, you have a lot of wonderful engineering talent. You certainly have more budget than you've ever had before. You have a willing team of testers out there. If not now, when does the opportunity come to cut the legacy cord, for crying out loud, and start off with something new rather than saying to some people, yeah, you're going to need JAWS 18, but this is working for JAWS 15, so you need to keep that installed. And that just gets really crazy in a lot of ways.
There's so much old code, right?
Yeah.
And it's not.
And to
be fair, this is not just a problem unique to JAWS. I remember talking to the people making QuickBooks more accessible. And part of what they're running into is like, yeah, we have all this code from the 90s.
Yeah.
That needs to somehow be refactored, that wasn't at all built for accessibility, and they have to go back and try to do it. You know, so you have lots of mainstream programs. I'm sure there's tons. I mean, look at Windows 10, and you have most of the things in settings, but every so often you kind of end up back in Control Panel, and an old screen from Windows XP that's still there because that's the best way to do it. So, you know,
but even, here's the thing is that we've had a lot of people writing in comparing NVDA to Jaws. And that is essentially like trying to compare a very fast sport utility vehicle versus a Mack truck, because NVDA is designed for one thing. NVDA, it is a screen reader. It's not trying to be anything else. And if you want it to be something else, that's what your add-ons are for. There's a lot of stuff in Jaws. There are a lot of services in Jaws, good or bad, no matter how you feel about it. And now you have more code in there for if it needs to work with a screen reader and a screen magnifier at the same time. So these weird comparisons that I've been seeing on the web have been kind of not working for me. They're kind of non-starters because you cannot compare one product that has one focus versus something that's trying to be an omni-focused product for every audience it can get its hands on.
Well, if you want to get ready for that next Jaws update version 19, it'll probably come out sometime in late October. You could set your watch to it and spun it up at the same time every year. In fact, you could set some new watches to
check that out.
Look at this. Rose gold, eh?
Rose gold. I wonder how that influence came about. Gold, gold mesh, rose gold. Thank you to Lulu Harchin for actually tweeting about that because I didn't see it at first. And then she's been talking about spending more money on watches. And so Bradley has some new timepieces, and they are just perfectly timed for consumer convention. Imagine that. So
Did you see those prices on these? I was trying to.
I did not. I assume that they are kind of the general Bradley pricing that we've seen. These are the
mesh gold and the mesh rose gold.
For those fashion conscious individuals out there who want to match other things, they might have already done that with their Apple watches.
Well, and they do a good job of. The mesh gold, there it is, $335.
Okay.
Or 0% financing, $56 a month. I mean, that's actually really cool. Not everyone does things like that.
No.
So you could do a 6 months same as cash type deal, and that's a little more reasonable and palatable for something like that. And yeah, I don't know who sells these at the
holidays.
Convention. Will somebody have them at the convention?
Bradley has had their own booth at convention before. We've interviewed them there. So they tend to be in the back of that first square of booths between the two booths, Section A and Section B. So they've been there before. So it could be Bradley themselves at NFB. I don't know about ACB. Is the ACB exhibitors list up yet?
No. Okay. Neither of them are up yet.
At the time of recording.
But yeah, well, they usually come out beginning of mid-June. Now, it's a little bit different this year, and this might throw some of you off. So ACB is end of June, and thus their pre-registration is out now. Now, ACB does their pre-registration a lot closer to convention. The NFB, well, by the time this thing goes out, will have ended. So if you didn't pre-register for NFB, well, you didn't pre-register for NFB. And you can do it on-site and pay a few bucks more. It's fine.
Also, if you've been waiting, Banquet seems to be selling out, even though people are complaining about pricing to Orlando. There's a real weird thing about July 4th. It tends to be cheaper to fly around July 4th. And this year,
the only thing that got me this year
in the middle is
a bit more expensive. Actually a little more. And the problem I did get a $300 ticket. I finally got my plane ticket and I paid way more to go to Reno, but it's a small city, than I did to go to Orlando. Now we're closer to Orlando as well. But NFB, it's you're flying Sunday to Sunday if you're doing the whole convention. So that definitely didn't help the situation. But, you know, get those plane tickets and whatever locked in if you're trying to do that. If you're really trying to go on a budget, you know, you could fly into Sacramento and take about a 4 or 5 hour Greyhound to Reno if you want to go to ACB. And then NFB has other airports. Yeah. NFB, you could fly into Orlando Sanford and take about a $40 or $50 Uber. So, you know, there's different ways.
Yes, that would be it.
This is blind bargain, you know? throw out the most obnoxious ways that you could get to convention.
I have flown, you know, the last time I was actually at this hotel, I was delayed because there was a storm in Phoenix. And I had to ask that person twice, like, there's a what and where now? There's a storm major rainstorm in Phoenix and my flight is delayed.
Is there another Phoenix in this country? I wasn't aware. There's two of the same city. You know,
right. Like Paris, Texas. Like something like that.
Right, exactly. Maybe that's what it was. What it was going on
instead of Hempstead,
there.
New York, it was Hempstead, Texas. No, I get it. No, it makes perfect sense. craziness. But if you're making your plans for ACB and NFB, remember that we will have coverage coming for those conventions. If you are not able to attend, I'll be coming to the ACB convention and recording there. We will have somebody recording at NFB as well, and it shall be very interesting because again, this will be an experiment. These conventions are apart from one another. So
I'm so happy for that. And, I mean, it enables, as an exhibitor, as an exhibitor. And then it's not even just the timing. It enables a smaller company like us, and I've posted on the website about this before, to do both shows. We don't have to go one way or the other. And I'm an NFB member, so, and the NFB is bigger. So we're going to go there if they're on the same week, with no disrespect to the great people over at the ACB.
Right.
You know, some people get mad about that decision, but we go to where the most people are. Yeah. And, you know, so when they are on the same week, we have to make that decision, and we can, you know, we try to do what we can to get some representation. But they're spread out this year, so we don't have to worry about any of that. They're so spread out that I could even come home for 2 days between the two.
No.
Which I know no, it's really.
What? You're not going to find some reason to go to Florida early and just hang out there and never come home for two?
No, I'm actually very happy. I have my ticket. Actually, it's 3 days. I will have 3 nights in my own bed between the two conventions, which the last time, I think it was Louisville or maybe it was Vegas, where I ended up stringing 2 weeks straight. And actually, remember the one before that? It was Google I.O. to NFB to ACB. Yep. So it was like 17 days.
And I would come by and check on you in the booth, and you were just like dazed, dazed and confused. So true. Oh God.
And that was the first half. So I'm very happy that things are kind of spread out. I mean, and it's really a lot of it's kind of down to the hotels and luck.
Yeah.
You know, they're really, NFB and ACB, I don't think they're not really trying to step on each other. I mean, they're not.
St. Louis will be closer next year.
St. Louis, I will probably take the train.
Yeah.
If, you know,
I was thinking I saw that. New York, yeah. I am not sure about, but St. Louis, yeah, you got that. That's easy.
We shall see. But anyway, we link to all these things, such as the ACB registration link over on our show notes at blindbargains.com, and you can do their wonderful and really, really, really lengthy registration form. But they do that to kind of, so you can register. Well, a lot of their sessions, they kind of just take care of the, you know,
true.
You can just pay ahead and
true.
Do the tours and things and...
True.
There are a lot of sessions that are kind of informational that ended up like with $5 fees that I wish would be free, but that's kind of the decision of some of the people that put those on, I guess, or sometimes they do them as fundraisers. So that's how they end up. But anyway, you can go look at that form and
fill
that out, and you have
get a bunch of fives before you go. You'll be really happy you did, whether it be tipping the person at the airport or somebody who helped you out at the hotel handing it out to people as you walk into meeting rooms. It helps to have, like, you know, five fives is what I used to jokingly say.
Fives for that. Yeah. Yeah. And then a bunch of ones for the bartenders as they bring you your drinks.
There's that too. Don't forget to tip your waitress.
Was this the hotel that had the dollar happy hour thing going on?
Oh, in Reno?
I believe, yeah. And I believe the deal was, I'm not sure if it's still this way 5 years later, but it might be $2 now, but it was from 3 to 7 p.m. or a.m.
that hour is extremely long. I knew there was a kind of issue with mountain, you know.
Right. No, I mean, so you choose which, if you want the PM or the AM or both, to be happy. Hour. I mean, it's Nevada. The bars don't close in Nevada.
And there's some cheap places to eat and or have delivered to at that hotel too. So you don't actually have
to. And there's an In-N-Out about 4 or 5 blocks away. Perhaps you want to go with me to it.
Yes. It's been a while since Animal Style.
Yes.
Yeah, look that up. For those of you who don't know what that meant, it was a In-N-Out menu.
All right,
we've rambled on enough to cover up 25 minutes of news. So coming up after this particular break, we'll come back and talk education, and then we'll talk about the kitchen, and then we'll roll into tip, sound off, and musical last word. All that and more on episode 103 of the Blind Bargains cast.
Go make it happen with GoVision, the new transportable video magnifier from HIMSS. With GoVision, you get all you'd expect from a transportable read, write, and distance magnifier with optical character recognition, plus the ability to enlarge and customize files, photos, and videos from your cell phone, tablet, or computer. Look at a slideshow of pictures from your vacation right from your thumb drive. Bring the world into focus with GoVision. For more information, call us at 888-520-4467. Visit us on the web at www.hims-inc.com and follow us on social media. HIMSS, lifestyle innovation.
Welcome back to the Blind Bargains cast. JJ here, and we're talking a little bit about Braille. We do a lot about Braille on this show and the importance of it. But one of the big problems of Braille is the lack of ways for kids and others to learn Braille, whether it's the cost of teachers or just the materials and things and tools that are out there to help kids and others learn Braille. Well, We have some people here that are trying to solve that problem with a crowdfunding campaign. Alex Tavares is the inventor of the Read Read. It's a device to help teach Braille. He's going to tell us all about it. Corey Catlick is assistive technology specialist at the Perkins Library, also working with Alex on this project. Hey guys, welcome to the Blind Bargains cast.
Thanks so much for having us on.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
That was Alex that you heard first, and then Corey over there, like I said, from Perkins. So Alex, I guess you invented this thing. So tell us a little bit exactly about the problem that you're trying to solve and what the Read Read is.
Sure. So there's this huge problem in the world with illiteracy for everyone, but it's especially significant in the community of people with visual impairments and blindness. So right now, even in the United States, only about 8.5% of kids who are blind are learning Braille. And there's a huge impact on future life outcomes. So for adults who are blind who don't know Braille, there's a 97% unemployment rate. So if you go on a lot of the websites for the biggest organizations for people with visual impairments and blindness, you'll read the benefits of Braille, like being able to label your things and find your belongings. But really, they're selling Braille short. Really, what Braille means for someone who's blind is literacy. And without knowing Braille, a blind child is illiterate. And a lot of kids, especially with the wonderful technologies that we have now, are being served even less by the school system. So they're actually not gaining those basic literacy skills because they're just being given text-to-speech and speech-to-text, which are wonderful tools, but they definitely shouldn't displace literacy
for
kids.
It's not reading. Sure.
Exactly. Exactly. And what we see, I've worked with adults who are visually impaired, blind, and sighted, who never learned to read as kids. Even for sighted adults who never learned to read as kids, they don't really have the mental constructs of order and placement of thoughts or the ability to manipulate text. So it really rules out almost all jobs that aren't something like manual labor for anyone of any ability. It's a crucial skill to have literacy in the workforce.
So you created a possible solution to this in the Read Read, which is, well, tell us, describe exactly what it is.
Yeah, so what led me to it was I was teaching literacy to children and adults of all abilities and all ages for the last 6 years. And I found that the rate limiting step, the thing that takes the most time, is establishing the correspondence between letters and their sounds. So for Braille, it's the identity of the letter. It actually takes an overwhelmingly long amount of time for kids to get this down, and adults if they learn later in life. And a lot of people forget about that. But then also for Braille, it's the correspondence between the Braille letter and the sound it makes, just like sighted kids learn phonics between a print letter and the sound. So I said, well, if that's the step that's taking me the longest with the kids I'm working with and the adults I'm working with, I can automate that process. So I developed this device called the Read Read, which has a set of about 50 tiles, and it has large embossed letters and Braille on each of the 50 tiles. And you take one of the tiles and you place it on a conductive grid, and it uses capacitive touch technology, just like your smartphone or your tablet screen. So when one of the tiles is in the grid and you touch the Braille on it, which is just under the large letters, you get immediate audio feedback. And you can get a few different types of audio feedback depending on the mode. It can tell you just what the letter name is. So you can imagine if you're an adult who lost vision later in life and you're learning Braille, that would be extremely helpful.
Sure.
Or a kid learning their letters through sight or through Braille. And then for Braille specifically, it does just what the TVIs and Braille teachers in the school do, which is it will tell you the letter name and the dot number right after you touch the Braille. So it's giving you that immediate audio feedback and making that correspondence for you, but in a way that kids can practice independently, which is lovely.
And in fact, there's a clip that you have over there on your Kickstarter page, so we can play a little bit of a sample of what that sounds like.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You're going to hear the mode with the letter name. You'll hear the letter name and the dot number, and then you'll hear the phonics as well. And that's going to be when you touch one of those tiles that has a letter on it. Instead of saying the letter name, it will make the sound that the letter makes. So, for example, when you touch the S, it won't say S, it will say S. And it does that for as long as the user is touching the Braille. Exactly.
It has tiles with very sturdy Braille on it, which can make a huge difference to a new Braille reader whose fingers aren't sensitive yet to actually feeling the individual dots. It does several things. It can identify the letter
C
when you touch it. The other thing that it does is to announce the dots themselves.
D, 1, 4, 5.
The letter identification is huge.
When they press their fingers to the tile, they hear the sound of the letter.
B, at, at.
They learn how to decode a word, which is very, very important.
So the tile itself, and I'm picturing like these Fisher-Price toys that they have for learning print, right, when you're little. Am I on the right track of what kind of where this is going as far as what the tiles look like or how they...
Yeah, it's a bit more sophisticated than things you've seen in the past.
Sure, yeah.
I wanted to make it aesthetically pleasing to children as well as adults. Adults mm-hmm. are a big population that I've worked with in the past. So you have a rectangular tile, and you can tell how it's oriented by the feel of it, so you won't mm-hmm. put it in upside down or anything like that. And you have a large embossed letter, so it's good for kids who have low vision as well. I've worked with some kids at the Perkins School for the Blind. Yeah, you can feel it.
You can see it really well. It's important.
Exactly, definitely. So some kids I've worked with who have low vision at Perkins, they'll actually use their vision to locate the tiles. But mm-hmm. kids with low vision have a lot of trouble differentiating between letters like I and L and J, which all look pretty similar.
Sure. Yep.
So they've been actually using the Braille to verify which letter is which. So the Braille teachers are really happy about that because otherwise it's hard to get some of these kids to practice their Braille.
And not only that, just as much as it's important for a blind person to learn Braille, I've often argued it's also important for a blind person to learn print, and having both on the same tile certainly helps in that as well.
Yeah, it's been wonderful, the incidental learning. We've seen some kids who aren't even candidates for using Braille have been learning it incidentally, which you think most people who use Braille could develop a visual impairment later in life. So to have young kids yep. learning it incidentally, just like they'll learn Pig Latin or any other number of skills that we wouldn't think to learn as adults, it would be wonderful for those kids to have it accessible to them later in life.
So Corey, Alex came to you at Perkins, and you were telling me before we did the interview that you guys kind of get bombarded with all sorts of products and projects of people, aspiring inventors and others. So what stood out to you about this, and why do you think it's so important?
So we get many projects that come through our doors at the library. People find out who, honestly, my boss is, who is Kim Charlson. And they realize that she's not only the director of the library, but she's the president of the American Council of the Blind.
Yeah.
And obviously people know she's important, so they want to get their foot in the door. So people come in with radar canes, Braille watches, things that might exist, or versions of things that they're trying to create that just don't have any legs. So when Alex came through the door the first time, I sat him down and I gave him the time of the day, like I always do. I always tell people, like, let me look at your product. And then I usually say, I often say, yeah, that exists, or I don't know. But he had a very fundamental, rudimentary idea that I really thought was going to go somewhere. And what I liked the most was the phonics part of it. The b, a, d. Like, you can actually make words with this thing. And actually, to be honest, that didn't exist at first. I just saw the initial rudimentary board and I thought, man, I think of Fisher Price toys, like you said, JJ, but
right.
The construction of the tiles was that much better. And so I gave him a second chance, and he didn't not give up, but he always had something new to bring to the table over the past like 8 months. Always had some new development when he walked in the door. It wasn't like, oh, I'm trying to do this or I'm trying to do this. He walked in the door and say, my shoulder hurts because I just embossed brand new metal tiles by hand. So this guy works his butt off and really wants to make a difference, and found something I really believe can go somewhere.
And, you know, just one of the big issues, it's not feasible in a lot of situations to hire a Braille teacher. And even if the school is providing one, you might get that teacher, as you say, on the Kickstarter once a week, once every other week. It's not a thing that they're going to be able to often get instruction every day and when they need it the most.
But you can have a regular reading teacher go in and sit down with a child and make words on this board, and the kid touches the braille, and you're actually making a connection between a sighted person and a blind person, visually impaired person.
How many words can it pronounce?
So it uses phonics, so it can actually pronounce any phonetic word. And a lot of the tiles have multiple letters, like ING, for example. We have the grade one braille for that, and we'll have the contracted braille in the future. But you can build quite complex words. As long as they're phonetic, it can sound it out. And we have different tiles for some of the different phonetic sounds. So, for example, A has the long A sound. It has an A sound, the short A. It has a nasalized A, like in man. And we have different tiles for all of those things. So this is it's a powerful...
Oh, you know which one is which.
So for the long vowels, for example, we have a line that precedes the braille. For the nasalized, we have a little squiggle. There are different conventions that we've developed, but they're all in line with sight conventions, and they're all in line with things that are really accessible to the TVIs and the braille teachers who have used them. They love the ideas there. There are some conventions for other languages with braille for long vowels, languages that differentiate, but they would be too confusing for a new braille learner, especially a younger child. So we created mm-hmm. some that are really easy for people to pick up the first time.
So the path, Alex, from then to now, so you've done some testing with some TVIs and braille teachers, as you said, and kind of that's probably helped shape some of the features that you've added over the past few months and brought you to the Kickstarter now, right?
Yeah, we actually ran a full 12-week pilot with students at the Perkins School for the Blind, and those students had varying abilities. Some of them had low vision, some of them were blind and learning braille for the first time, some were proficient braille users who needed help with their spelling. We had kids with multiple disabilities, such as blindness and autism, using the device and seeing how they interacted with it. And then some kids who had physical disabilities, such as muscular dystrophy or low muscle tone. And that really helped the design for the ease of use for the user. So we're designing within a universal design for learning framework. My professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, Dr. David Rose, he's the guy who literally wrote the book on UDL. He invented it. So I was doing my piloting alongside him and making sure that this is a device that's accessible to all kids. And that certainly includes kids who are blind and visually impaired.
That's very cool. So you've come to crowdfunding, which is a very common thing to do. We've had several on this podcast. I think it's a really excellent way to kind of feel out an ideal or a project to see where the interest is. I'm not going to lie, it's a steep climb. You're asking for over $250,000. Where's that money going to go? And then could you talk a little bit about the Kickstarter?
Yeah, so 100% of that money will go towards starting up the manufacturing for the device and donating a minimum of 400 devices to kids who are blind and in need. So these are kids who don't have the services currently to learn Braille and would benefit from it, as it would be their only means to literacy. If we get additional donations over that cap, we'll just be providing more devices for the kids. So I'm not taking a salary. Nobody is. It's all going towards this project.
You do have some different rewards available for people who choose to back.
Yeah, so at $10, we'll put you on our wall of appreciation, which will stay up forever on our site, thereadread.com. And at $25, you'll actually get a commemorative tile that we'll send you in the mail, and you can actually feel the high-quality braille and the embossed letters to get a sense of what the device is like for a child or an adult who's going to use it in the future.
And there's donation levels higher up for people who want to actually provide an entire read device or provide one for schools or et cetera, all the way up to $10,000 if you wanted to just buy it for a whole bunch of kids and on the thing.
Exactly. It's an exact proportion of the number of kids you would be serving. So if you're a philanthropist in the space and able to donate $10,000, you would be providing 20 units to kids all around the United States and Canada. So if you're able to afford one device for a child, that would be absolutely phenomenal. But of course, just a $10 contribution would make a huge impact on the future of children with visual impairments. So what I think of for an adult who might be listening in, and you know, it's cool that this thing uses capacitive touch and you know, braille at the same time, I like to let people think of the fact that that kid who is 3 years old right now and not approaching Braille, or even 7 years old and still hasn't been introduced to Braille in public school setting, that kid might be able to grow up to be an attorney for people who are blind or visually impaired, you know, cover their cases. That kid could be the person who represents you in a civil rights case. But if they're not literate, they won't have that chance. So I think it's in everyone's interest, but especially the interest of people with visual impairments, to consider donating. This is a total profitable, not a profitable, it's a total charitable cause.
Sure. Makes a lot of sense. Hey, Corey, when a project like this comes to you and Perkins, and you obviously had a lot of interest, and you were the one that brought it to us over the Blind Bargains Twitter, does Perkins get involved with things like that? I mean, obviously Perkins has a huge stake in Braille and always has, and, you know, has done a lot of support in that area. I know there's other teaching tools that are out there. Are you still involved from a Perkins perspective, or are you mostly just kind of just helping him promote at this point?
All I can say right now, I can't say much, but we are in very, very initial stages of showing it to the higher ups and decisions. They need to make those decisions. But my boss and I do believe it's something that's worth moving forward with. And I think if we can see a push of donations and to really show that we have interest, we already have quite a bit of interest, but if we can get more donations to show to our president to really cement it in and say, hey, this is going somewhere, he very well might be up to help us move forward, but there's no definites yet on that.
And have you guys talked to any of the consumer organizations or other of the big blindness organizations, as far as, because I know one of the things that both ACB and NFB, and as well as many others, have a uniting cause on is the agreement with all of us that Braille is indeed important.
Yeah,
so I've seen it go out from, sorry, Alex.
I was just going to say on the, you're going. I'll let you go, Corey.
Speaking from social media, this has been my baby for the past like 2 weeks. I've seen Perkins tweeted out. I believe I've seen ACB tweeted out. I haven't looked at NFB, but yeah, so they've seen it. They've got eyes on it, so to speak.
The benefit of going towards a crowdfunding campaign is we can get this thing in the hands of kids by November. Right now, for example, the American Printing House for the Blind, they're interested in the device, and it's moving on to their final judging to whether or not it will be available to all public school students. But the timeline on that is 2.5 years at a minimum. And I know that there are kids who can benefit from this today. So I want to get this into the hands of kids as soon as possible.
Well, it's very cool, and we'll definitely we'll put a link to all of this, of course, in the Kickstarter page. People can donate on the on our show notes over at blindbargains.com, and we'll tweet it out as well. If you guys want to give out any additional contact information, if people have questions and they want to learn more about this.
Yeah, you can write to us at thereadread@gmail.com. That's thereadread@gmail.com. And the easiest way to get to the Kickstarter is just to go on Google and type in Kickstarter the read, and it will be the awesome. First hit.
Awesome. And like I said, well, or they can go to blindmarkets.com. We'll link to it.
It's true.
And either way, again, thank you so much, both of you, for coming on. Corey, for bringing it to our attention on Twitter, and Alex, for inventing this really cool sounding product. We'll definitely be following this one and see where it goes, and wish you guys the best of luck.
Thanks so much for having us on. We appreciate everyone's support. Please support the Read. Thanks so much.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Blind Bargains Test Kitchen once again, and I'm here today with Ricky.
Hello. Also, the Blind Bargains Kitchen may contain
animals,
dogs, and or cats, but they're not going to be used as ingredients, so no. We can relax about that.
I would hope not. But they may be observing just in the background because, well, after all, it's lovely, delicious food that we are making. And, of course, we just used the Instapot just moments ago before we actually started recording. Now, that's not what we're here to talk about. You've talked about with the carrots and Instapot and JJ. Mm-hmm. But today we're going to talk about something that people asked us to talk about. And the first time I heard about this thing was Randy Rusnick, the air fryer. And this is the Philips air fryer, in fact.
Yep. There are a lot of different versions of an air fryer. This one is the Philips air fryer. It's the 9220 version of it. Completely accessible, well, almost completely accessible, and I'll talk about that in a moment, because there aren't that many knobs and buttons and things to pay attention to. The thing I love about the air fryer is that I, like probably many of you, really, really love fried foods. I think French fries are my comfort food. But, of course, the problem is that they're not particularly healthy because there's always a lot of oil involved with good fried food. The thing about the air fryer is that you can still get that lovely crispness on your fried food that you would think requires oil, but apparently does not, because this device doesn't use oil most of the time at all. Now, occasionally you will use a bit of oil on some things, but when I say a bit of oil, I'm talking about perhaps a teaspoon, no more than a tablespoon of oil. So let's talk about how big the unit is. It's actually, it takes up more counter space than I would expect for the amount that you can fit inside it.
So we have a pot nearby that we cook pasta in, and it's about, the circumference isn't too far away from that, in fact.
It's probably the size of a large pot.
About your front right burner on your stove, more than likely. And it stands as tall as a coffee pot. I actually put it up against a traditional coffee pot, one that does K-cups, and then, of course, this pot right here, the Instant Pot and all that. It's a little shorter than the coffee pot and the Instant Pot. So it's easy to store. So if you don't want it out on your counter, you actually can put it into a place if you have space in your kitchen larder, or if you have space on top of your refrigerator, which is what we do. We actually have this that resting up there in case we need it, because we need it at an emergency notice. You never know when you're going to need those French fries or chicken fingers.
Yeah. And by the way, you can do more than just food that you would fry in this. I've done a steak in the air fryer before. I really enjoy doing veggies. I've done green beans. I've done zucchini. I love potato wedges, which, yes, are different than fries, but you can still get that wonderful crispness on the potato wedges without having to toss them in like half a cup of olive oil and do them in the oven. So we've talked about the size of this, of the outside anyway.
Mm-hmm. The controls are in the front.
Yep, there are two, count them, two controls. One is on the top, and it's sort of vertically installed in the unit such that really all you have is a knob and no way to tell what it's pointing at. Normally this would be a huge, huge problem, but this is the temperature knob, and most everything that I cook is actually cooked at the highest setting, which on this unit is 390 degrees. The turning it all the way to the left is the maximum, and as you turn to the right, then you're going down all the way to like 180, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. 160, 180, yeah.
Yeah, but I usually keep mine all the way to the left, and just the tiniest bit of adjustment will take it back to 360. I mean, just barely kind of moving your finger on this knob will take that to 160. Below this, and more on the front of the unit rather than the top, is a knob that we'll demonstrate in just a moment, and this is the timer knob. It does have a pointer on it, so you could conceivably put bump dots and other things around it to tell how much you've turned the knob, but really, since there are so many better timer options out there, I will just ask Google or Siri to set a timer, and I'll turn this all the way to the right, which is a setting of 30 minutes, and then just turn it off when I'm done. Below the knob here is the handle, which points downwards, and I can pull it out. Now what I have in my hand is a set of two pieces that are currently attached to each other. I'm going to set this down and press a button in the top of the handle, which is actually on the portion that I've just taken out. Now I've lifted off the pan, which is where you're going to put your actual ingredients. The bottom of this, I'm running my fingers across it, is mesh, although I'm not entirely sure that it's metal. Much of this is plastic, and that may be a good thing, not sure. But this is a basket which has mesh lining in the bottom. The piece that it fits over is where any oil or liquids that you do have in your food will drain down into. Some people actually cook bacon in this.
Uh-huh.
I think that would generate a lot more smoke than I necessarily want to have in my kitchen, because the oil in the bottom continues to heat even once it's dripped down. So that's not a thing I do, although I have done bacon-wrapped shrimp, and it was delicious.
That's true. Super Bowl.
Yes. So in order to reattach the basket to the reservoir, I suppose, I'm just going to slot the portion of this handle down into, and it
locks
into place like that.
And then it slides back into the air fryer.
Yep, it's kind of like a drawer.
So it's like a fry basket, and then you put it back in its little catch-all, and then you put that whole assembly back into the large air fryer mechanism itself.
Now, just to give a quick idea of what will not fit, if you are, for example, making homemade burritos and you think, oh, I'll just lay one of these end-to-end in this thing, think again, because it doesn't quite fit.
No.
So you can cook one, maybe two burritos at a time, but you have to place them in at an angle.
And flour tortillas do tend to be the nemesis of this device.
Yeah, while most things really crisp up nicely, I've done taquitos using shredded chicken that I've done in my Instant Pot and then rolling that into corn tortillas. Those crisp up really nicely and taste pretty authentic. The flour tortillas, they get harder, but not so much crispier. It's a very strange texture that I can't say I'm a big fan of.
Styrofoam.
Maybe spraying them with a little bit of oil before cooking might assist with that. But if you're thinking, ooh, I'm going to have like deep fried chimichangas or whatever, that's not going to happen.
In fact, dense foods can be very problematic. If you take something out of the freezer, you may want to let it defrost a little bit before you attempt something. So if you do that same thing, but it be a frozen burrito, that could be problematic.
Yep, because the outside can get done and the inside not so much. This is really great for preparing foods that you would do in the oven. So frozen pre-prepared foods, you would, I forget the exact rule of thumb, but what I've found is that let's say that you have something that would normally cook in the oven for 20 minutes, like maybe fish sticks or something, you can cook in between 10 and 12. So it's slightly over half the time that you would spend in the oven. One thing to keep in mind though is that at about the halfway mark, take out your food, release this little basket a bit, shake the food that's inside just so that it's redistributed a bit and the things that were on the bottom can get a little closer to the top and vice versa. Do that, slide it back on, and slide it back in.
Kind of the same thing you would do with the deep fryer or Fry Daddy or something like that, where you take it out and kind of move stuff around like hush puppies or that kind of thing when you're cooking it. So
yep. Yeah. And again, you can do roasted vegetables, steak, other meats. One thing that I'm looking forward to trying is wings. A lot of people will do wings in their air fryer, and the wings can get fully cooked right here in the air fryer. You don't have to pre-cook them in some other contraption first. You can do that in the air fryer. We'll have a link to a couple of places to get air fryer recipes in the show notes. Before we go though, want to give you an idea of what it sounds like when you're actually cooking. So I'm going to turn this knob. So what you have inside is an actual fan that is circulating really hot air, and that's what's doing the cooking.
And it's about as loud as the exhaust fan on your stove.
Yeah, in fact, it's just almost exactly that loud. So I can kind of turn this timer. Let's say that my timer was set for 2 minutes and it's finally done and I'm ready to turn this off. That's the sound that you get when you turn the knob back to the left and it shuts off. I will note one thing. When you're ready to come in and shake your food that's cooking, just slide your basket out while this is still going. So it's perfectly safe to have that air just kind of hanging out there without the basket in it. Slide it right back in.
So it's a fairly small area. Remember that if you're going to do like tater tots or pizza rolls, you know, that's a good thing for it. And you can do multiple batches, of course. Has a retractable cord on this particular model, which is pretty helpful. The majority of it is plastic on the sides and the like, which makes it easy to keep clean, by the way. That's,
yeah, it really helps a lot.
So, yeah, that is the Philips air fryer. We use it often. And this was a surprise Christmas gift, something that just was on sale at Best Buy. I've seen them come down as low as $140 in this particular model, which was the Viva. Yeah, the Viva. There are some other ones. It is available in black as well as silver in black, kind of a chrome looking. The all-purpose black is easier to clean and looks better, in my opinion, because the silver looks like it can get dirty really quickly and attract fingerprints.
And there you have it. This is yet another way that you can cook really yummy and also just a bit healthier food that maintains its crunch right in your own kitchen.
And it's quick and it's easy to clean. And for those who might feel uncomfortable using a typical fryer with the oil and all of that.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
This is a lot easier. So thanks to Randy and Debbie for talking about this last year, because that was the genesis of us purchasing this. And look in the show notes at blindbargains.com under episode 103, and you'll find the information that we were talking about. Thanks, Ricky.
Thanks for having me in the test kitchen.
We talk a lot on this show about upgrading to the latest versions of things, and I just did that, upgrading from Office 2007 to Office 2016. The biggest reason I did the upgrade? Well, security. Microsoft is going to stop supporting Office 2007 towards the end of this year, so if you have this or an older version of Office, you will no longer get security updates, and a really good reason to upgrade. Yes, the upgrades sometimes bring things that you're not so familiar with, and they kind of change things that you loved. One of the biggest ones for me is the simple open and save as dialogues, the ones that pop up when you go to open or save a file. They try to replace it with this new modern thing showing this PC and other locations and things like that. Blah, blah, blah. I don't like it. Well, there are some hotkeys to get you back to the way it used to be. Instead of going through the menus, the simple Control O for open still works to bring you straight to the file open dialog box. That one's pretty simple. Well, you can't do Alt F and A for save as anymore, but you can press F12. That'll take you straight to the dialog box where you can save a file in the old familiar way using the dialog box that you've used for many, many, many years. Just a quick tip to help you if you're using a newer version of Microsoft Office. Send your tips to feedback at blindbargains.com.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback at blindbargains.com or tweet us at blindbargains.
JJ reminded me that we hadn't featured some of the comments from episodes past, as well as some of the comments from the articles that we post over at blindbargains.com. And I will freely admit it's because I forgot about them. Now that we've changed the website, I forget to look for comments, so that's on me.
You know, we try to make the website more visual.
I know. You can teach a dog
after
to fish.
After all this time, finally try to make the website, you know, look a little bit better.
Teach a dog to fish.
And hope it's helping out a little bit, especially if those of you who are low, if you're low vision, let us know.
Fed to dogs.
What you think.
Yeah. Sky Mundell writes in and says that he appreciated having us having Dave Williams on and talking about WindowWise, and it was very inspiring to him. He agreed with a lot of the words and wished that some of that was available to his school back in the day. I find, though, with working with people in education and the like, there is usually that one tastemaker, and that one particular tastemaker seems to influence not just their school, but it may be an influence of the particular school district or someone in the ahead area. And it does necessarily depend on your dealer or your vendor and how influential they are. There's a lot of things with education on how standards become standards, or at least accepted standards, even though it was kind of passively done. So the long story short, sometimes it does take just advocation and providing things like we talked about with Bradley. Oh, look, there's an option for that. And sometimes it's buried and it's up to us to be the water bearers to pass that along and go, hey, yeah, but did you know And then you, you know, look like the hero of the universe doing that, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Lewis also had a comment about your tip, and it was about you traveling. Have you used other payment methods like Venmo and Square Cash?
So I've used Venmo. Venmo is another one of those kind of person-to-person payment things, actually now owned by PayPal. Anyway, I have not set up Square Cash personally, and also Facebook has one as well. Not for any particular reason that I haven't, just that it's kind of like messaging clients. Like, okay, how many of these do I need?
Yeah, and how much do I want that information on?
Right. Yeah, and with these, you have to usually link them to a bank account. So that's some information that, you know, I kind of want to guard a little bit. But obviously, all of the ones that I just mentioned are very major payment. They're all payment processors. I would trust my bank account info with Square already has it anyway. Through AT guys and you know, Facebook. I don't know about that one, but
then you have a reason to use that stupid little marketplace tab.
That is true, but it is good to have those type of services. And you know, in this situation where you know we needed to quickly get payment from one person to another. And, you know, it's good to have, and at least having a couple different options. So I can be, hey, do you have PayPal? Do you have Venmo? Especially if I'm in a group of people back to convention, the PayPal and Venmo and those type of services really helps to solve the how we paying for the pizza problem. Because not everyone is going to have so much cash, and especially by the end of convention, your cash might be a little depleted. And instead of having to run to an ATM, it's really just so much easier to, all right, everyone just PayPal me $10 and here's the address. And, you know, bam, everyone has their, you know, they'll send it over to you and it's taken care of. So I think it is really good for little things like that. And kind of, because if you try to, you ever tried to for a week, like, all right, I'll buy this one, you buy the next one. Okay, now you owe me $12. Right, now I owe you $8. And you try to keep a tally.
Yeah.
By day three or four, it's just easier to just take care of it when it comes up and you don't have to worry about it. And but yeah, I like a lot of those services, and they're really kind of, they're cool to play with.
The comments on various feelings on WindowEyes being discontinued sparked many comments over at our particular website. And we have a couple of that we feature here. Sky Mundell, again, with a personal story of how WindowEyes worked for him as 10-year veteran of the project. CW has some thoughts. I'm interested in this one here from Josh about his thoughts on how they should do more for eSpeak and that they have time and effort and development. I didn't even realize that we had this in our comments, but it echoes some of the things I was talking about at the top of the show. It also talks about lowering the cost of the program.
Look, no, honestly, okay, you have to
I'm
say what you will about JAWS.
Yeah.
I mean, what they've done at the conventions here and also in other countries, apparently, too, the home use thing, that's less than one-tenth of the cost of the $8.95. To offer it for $50 or $75 or, you know, I think it was 50, right?
Yeah.
$50?
75. That's, it's 50 and 75 for us. 75 and 50 for SMAs. I mean, mm-hmm. It's kind of...
That's amazing. That's honestly, you know, that's an amazing deal. And if they come back with that this year, you really do have to give them a lot of credit for that. Because, I mean, obviously for home use, $8.95 is a barrier. And coming in for under less than $100 with a decent SMA thing, I think that really does kind of show you something. And yeah, they probably did some of it to kind of build up the market share towards VFO. So we'll see if they still continue that this summer now that kind of some of the dust has settled. But I you do have to give them a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, I can say fairly honestly that the desire for all software companies, not just VFO, is to lean towards the enterprise. That's where the money is institutions, enterprise, the mass licensing of things versus individuals. You know, think of it like how many times you're going to buy a car, you know, so the individual doesn't necessarily, it matters, but it doesn't necessarily matter as the new company that needs 19 trucks in order to start their fleet. It is like that for a lot of software and software licensing. So it's disproportionate. But one of the things that isn't said here is that let's say you are working for a company that is licensing a VFO product for its workplace. The users of that product, the individual users, can actually get a cheaper version of that product for home use. And that's established as well. You can find out more about that at freedomscientific.com. Not that I'm chilling, but for people.
But yeah, if you want to buy it for the office, then you're paying.
That's going to cost you. But if you're going to, if you're an office worker who's working there and want to be able to have a copy of that at home, it actually is a little bit more affordable and made affordable, which I think is kind of nice. It is, again, I think it's hard for us still to understand that there is some real world situations like, okay, my team dissolvement, you know, that wasn't anything out of nowhere. That is typical situations that happen in a software company where a project ends and that's the end of that. You know, there's no ill will, no ill feelings. That's just how it works in the world. And so I have no problems with that. I understand how this works, but there are some people who, again, this is new to them or they're not sure how this works. Now, of course, there's speculation over other products that are going to go away. That was going to happen anyway. We talked about that last year. There was too much overlap. And that's what's happening is there's overlap in the video magnification area. There's overlap.
Yeah. Magic users, get ready.
Sure.
No, it's common.
And look at all the ABIC users from years past. Mm-hmm. So that happens when somebody takes over somebody, you know, like people were afraid of workflow when Apple bought it. You know, it was like, oh, that's the end of that. No more updates for workflow. Apple purchased it. Well, I'd rather Apple purchase them and some of the team survive than Apple Sherlock workflow and knock them out of the market because Apple's going to do it. So this happens in software licensing. Silicon Valley on HBO is a good show for watching that kind of stuff. But all these comments are good and valid and important, so make sure you keep making them over at the website.
What I like a couple of Marcy's memories there on the last one there. Yeah. Just kind of reminiscing about some of the things that that GW did. The payment plan, the lease to own.
That was ahead of its time.
Way ahead of its time. They were the first ones, I believe, to do that. Also talking about when this wasn't the only time, but one of the ones that she remembers is when Microsoft invited screen reader manufacturers to come and work with them on Vista. It was GW and I believe probably Doug that went out there.
And he turned around and did a lot of presentations afterwards, CSUN and some others, to talk about what wasn't working and what wasn't working in GW land as well as Microsoft to make that work. That was my famous one at CSUN where he needed the hotkey for the gadget bar, which was Windows plus G, and I was able to call that out to Doug. I was so proud of myself. It was one of those opportunities where I was like, I contributed! Yay, me!
That's hardcore, Joe.
Yes, that at that point in time, there were actual people using Vista. That alone.
That itself is hardcore.
Some people might find that incredibly hard to use. I would say I was one of the people that found Vista hard to use. However, there are people out there who might find that HTML is a real bear to use, and they might reach to other powers to teach them said such thing. That is my last word here on this particular episode. Here's a little bit. It doesn't have to be much audio. Just a little bit of the most brutal HTML tutorial you'll ever hear.
HTML is so hard. If only Satan could help me.
Did somebody say Satan?
I was sent from the depths of hell to take to watch an artificial. It's a back of foil pages that you love.
Some hardcore metal there on HTML5, almost death metalish, if you will.
I'm scared.
Yeah.
All right, fine. I'll learn it though.
Yes, if you needed motivation on how to learn HTML, then Dark Lord was probably one of those people that would motivate you to learn or decide that you never want to code again. Possibly, who knows?
Thanks.
Yeah.
There's lots of ways you can learn things, and that is yes, one of them. I would prefer, you know, some of the other W3C schools and things like that.
It's a long way from the one that you sing all the time.
that's not the way I learn. And, you know. I don't know. It's torture. And actually, so there you go. We do have a common theme of last word.
Oh,
torture.
Ah,
torture.
Here, torture.
This is a The actual video comes from a channel I have not seen before called the Slow Mo Guys. Have you heard of them?
No, but I like the
name. Not, and I don't really, even the slow mo part is whatever. That I'm sure that visually looks cool. Let me. There's only about 4 seconds of this clip I need to play for you, and we will play that. The video is called "Diving into 1,000 Mouse Traps."
Oh, ow!
What happened? How did that do it?
Is it
the one I was pushing?
I don't know. I'm just in pain. Ow. I'm just in pain hearing that.
Ow. That just does not sound like... And he's in so much pain, he's not making any noise. That's what I'm thinking. No. There's that initial reaction, and then
it's you're stopped. Okay. Mm. Okay. Mm-mm. Okay.
That's as bad as the one I saw last week where they started doing a bee beard and then the bees got spooked and started stinging the guy. And I was just like, oh, no. You know, it just.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
I'm all about stupid things on the internet, but do things like trying to eat all that food from Grand Theft Auto 5 or something like that. It you know, it's not going to cause like physical pain to me watching you do that. So if you decide to eat something and it made you sick, okay, that I get. But. No, that is, yeah. So people like doing this on YouTube. Of course, that comes from Jackass from years ago.
That channel has like 7, or I think either the channel or the video has like 7 million views. Just saying, if you want to be a YouTube star,
it's an act of diminishing returns, isn't it? You know, how do you top it the next time? And better yet, who's going to recognize you at the Burger King?
Yeah. So I've not scanned these guys' channel. I might have to see what the heck else they do.
So if there's a blind equivalent of that, let us know. We'd like to talk about that. That might be some homework for you to send it on in to feedback@blindbargains.com. If you could think of something about that, trying to read something with only 3 braille cells active on a 20 cell display. No, we actually did have a joke about that at one point though, about trying to read copy on a 14 cell display, which is, a story for another time.
Oh gosh, yeah, it's
information
fun.
Is going to be fast and furious coming in for the next couple of weeks because we have, of course, WWDC, and then for me and other video game people who have sore thumbs from Injustice, which is still happening for me. My Batman's up to level 20. My Black Canary's up to level 14. We're going to talk about E3, the Entertainment Electronic Expo, which is video games at some point, and probably a whole lot more before we run.
I never knew what that stood for.
Oh yeah,
thanks.
Oh yeah, not a problem.
No,
useless knowledge, trivia night, Jeopardy. Right. I'm that guy.
Yeah,
I'm mental. Yeah,
I appreciate it. Really,
my mental really lint trap is full of useless knowledge. And you can find out more about that by going over to twitter.com/rangerstation, all one word. See how I did that segue? That was really cool. So twitter.com/rangerstation, all one word, to be able to find out about this.
Joe and ask him about you can tweet him and ask him about how he does weird segues.
This is
maybe
true.
He can do a class. Maybe he can do a class on segues.
A master class on segues.
You know, while you're riding your segue, you can tweet us over at Blind Bargains. And if you have comments for the show, you could do them there. You can also email us feedback@blindbargains.com. You can do show comments, and Joe might eventually see them over on any of the show posts at the blindbargains.com. And, check out the new app for iOS and the older classic app for Android.
Soon to be revamped app for Android.
So what's going on? And it's a process. Michael is working on it for us, but this is also his first Android app. So he's kind of learning Android coding in the precipice of learning or doing our app. So
yeah, and shout out to him because he's got some thoughts about Android with the Google I/O talk over at iAccessibility. So that's another thing you might want to check out. I'll see if I can slide a link in the old show notes here. And we'll have to get that guy to come on and talk at some point. It's been a while since we've had BBQ regular Doyce on to sit in the chair and talk about things.
That'd be good.
Absolutely.
We're going to have someone. We're going to hopefully bring on some people or do something. It's definitely going to be an Apple show next week. There's no bounds about it.
No avoiding that. There looks like it's going to be new hardware and stuff. Also, quick shout out to our sponsors, Hims. Thank you for sponsoring this particular program and several others. Remember, you can learn so much more about the new Polaris by heading back to the information that we posted in March from CSUN. Thank you, Hims.
Yes, and of course you can visit them on the web at www.hims-inc.com. www.thenewtransportablevideomagnifier.com. And you can also email us if you want to advertise yourself, your company, your brand over on this year podcast or the website. You can email us and let us know. And absolutely, we can do a package for you.
And happy birthday to Editor-in-Chief Mr. Patrick Perdue, who just crossed his birthday just recently at the time of the recording. So
yeah, you know, it's true. I guess the last show actually probably came out closer to his birthday, but this one's closer on the recording side,
yeah, because
it's a couple of days. We do appreciate you coming on. And thanks also to Alex and Corey for coming on and talking about the Read. It was very cool. And we do appreciate it. And go check out the Kickstarter. We've linked to that, as well as everything else on our show notes at blindbargains.com.
That'll do it for this week. See us next week, and we will have the flip side to the Google I.O. in WWDC conversation.
All right, cool. I'm coming over for some air fryer goodness.
Oh, okay. I will prepare it on older iPads because you don't have to get rid of all the old ones to make room for a new iPad or new MacBook, or it's just obsolete now. Throw them on the side. Pointless.
Okay. Sounds good.
We're going to be next eating week, on them. Yep. There are plates. That's it. You hold your Apple party with old iPads. Those are your dinner plates or coasters. No, that would be iPods.
Awesome.
iPods would be perfect. Coasters, maybe. Though.
Yeah, the iPods would be a little too, but the newer ones are a little bit. All right, see you next week, folks.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2017.
Oh my God!
God!
Flip!
How was that? I think they all went off.
I think so.
I think they all went off.
That one didn't. Let me see. Shall we see how many need to go off? Hang on. They all went off.